The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the New York Times and the Washington Post. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. And as you may have noticed, we've once again left the confines of a sound studio, so to speak, or soundproof studio, I should say, and we're back outdoors. This time, we're in the lovely Western North Carolina community of Fairview, and we're sitting on a back patio of a home that is looking toward Mount Pisgah, which is south of Asheville. So we're going to do it outdoors, and you'll enjoy the sounds of nearby Highway 74, which is the route you take coming off of I-40 south of Asheville, and that takes you to a place called Bat Cave, which we will not be visiting today, but I just wanted to give you a heads up geographically where we might be. Recently, a neighbor shared a story about his daughter who lives in Prague, and because of a limited and a sporadic supply of COVID vaccine, she and her children are going to be flying here this summer just to get some vaccinations. And our first article is going to mirror this theme. Heading home for the vaccine, one expat's transatlantic journey. Andrew Farron is our writer, and it appeared in the May 11th, 2021 issue of the New York Times. And there was a wonderful photo caption, a little artwork, and the caption reads, "With Europe's vaccine campaign stymied, the Madrid-based author, along with his husband and children, boarded a plane for the U.S. The act of taking matters into one's own hands," he writes, "can feel daunting." So let's see what Mr. Farron has to say. "If COVID-19 has taught us anything, it's to expect the unexpected. Outcomes that seem assured today may become impossible tomorrow, and vice versa. As an American living in Madrid for much of the last 20 years, I have deep roots in both Spain and the United States, and over the last 14 months have often felt the pandemic unfolding at two different speeds. When one country has been relaxing protocols, the other has been restricting activity. The contrast has never been clearer than right now, as the pandemic has once again flipped the script. In December, no one expected the U.S. vaccine rollout to get rolling so fast. At that time, some observers forecast that Americans, of whom around 200,000 or more were getting infected every day, might be banned from many European countries through 2022 or longer. Now, just 4 months into 2021, the European Union has announced plans to welcome vaccinated Americans to countries where many locals may still be at risk. In mid-March, as friends and family were getting vaccinated in the United States, and as production problems and health concerns about some vaccines slowed the European Union's already sluggish campaign, my husband and two children and I found ourselves packing our suitcases for New York. A few weeks later, we returned for the second dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine and some long-awaited family time. Recent news articles have focused on American expats who have considered going back to the United States to get vaccinated. While it's impossible to determine the exact numbers, I personally know about a half a dozen Americans across Europe who, like us, made that decision. Only U.S. citizens, their spouses, if traveling with them, or parents of minor children who are American citizens can enter the United States, and anyone over two must have a negative test within 72 hours of arrival. The U.S. government has no program for vaccinating Americans abroad, and expats, all of whom maintain the same rights, voting, for example, and responsibilities, filing income taxes of residents, are free to fly home and get vaccinated. But the act of taking matters into one's own hands can feel daunting, and there was also the fear that, as it was happening in Europe this winter, we might turn up for our shots only to be told they were out of vaccines and we'd have to reschedule. Finally, I reached out to two American friends who are doctors. One, an infectious disease specialist in my home state of New Jersey, said, "The number of doses being distributed and administered now is growing exponentially. If you get an appointment, I'd make it to that appointment." Tolerating limitations is our next section. The prospect of getting vaccinated was a big turnaround from spring 2020, when the first wave of illness crashed over Europe, especially Italy and Spain. Confining us to our homes and shuttering schools and businesses while Spaniards were encouraged to curtail nearly all movement and activity. But the strict measures and nearly universal compliance flattened the curve to such an extent that by mid-June, just as unexpectedly as we'd all shut ourselves inside, suddenly outdoor gatherings were back on the table. The rental company that provided a sterilized bouncy house, for our twins' tiny birthday gathering on June 20th was so delighted to have a client that at all that they let us keep it for nearly a week. Well, I should mention that COVID is not my family's first rodeo in terms of social distancing and extreme health-related stress. In 2011, our twins were born at just 23 weeks gestation, weighing 1.5 pounds each and requiring ventilators for about 6 weeks. We spent their first year isolating in Maplewood, New Jersey, awash in sanitizer with pulse oximeters hanging from our necks, masking when needed, and keeping them and ourselves out of circulation until their lungs had recovered from the damage caused by the ventilators before getting exposed to the typical childhood respiratory infections. The experience taught us a lot about tolerating limitations and making the most of every easy moment that we could, so that by July 2020, with daily COVID infection rates low, we were looking for pandemic silver linings. We loaded Fletcher, our 5-month-old COVID puppy, and ourselves into our van and zigzagged across Spain from Cadiz at the southernmost tip to Asturias on the northern coast. One place we didn't plan to go last summer was the United States, by then the world leader in COVID cases and where outbreaks in Sunbelt states like Florida and Texas forever crushed the fantasy that the virus would disappear in warm weather. My parents, who live in New Jersey, are in their late 80s and my children under 10, so we try to bring them together often, and we kept optimistically booking tickets last year in case the pandemic suddenly abated. But as intentional restrictions took hold, all of those flights were eventually canceled by the airline. In the meantime, many friends in Spain had gotten sick, but thankfully most recovered. Then in early August, we lost a wonderfully gregarious friend who, at age 52, was somehow gone just 9 days after his diagnosis. A couple of similarly startling deaths followed, and it was like the music stopped. We reverted almost to lockdown protocols, which was maybe a good thing since autumn brought a new wave of infections that has barely ebbed since. From the outset, my greatest fear was that my husband and I, both have underlying health issues, would get seriously ill at the same time with no relatives in Madrid to care for our kids. Thus, we have been vigilant, only meeting people outdoors and doing lots of home testing, an area where Spain is way ahead of the United States. All of this was in the background at dinner one night in early March when we wondered if it was time to cancel our tickets to New York for spring break at the end of that month. The United States was then still registering massive daily infections, but also setting daily records for vaccines administered. We'd previously accepted we might not be able to go until 2022 or later, but after thinking a bit, I said, whenever we're able to get vaccinated, I would go. One Saturday morning, about a week after that dinner, we caught a pharmacy website just as it was being refreshed. Dozens of appointments were available in New Jersey, some the very next day. We decided to pull the trigger. As the kids would be off school, we brought them. We didn't want to be opposite sides of the ocean during a pandemic, and we also wanted them to see at whatever distance their grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins after 15 months of being apart. Next section, discovering a different New York City. Boarding the plane for New York, I was still concerned this would be a perilous journey, but as I watched my children compete to see who was better at wiping down the surfaces around their airplane seats before connecting their headphones and debating which movie to first watch, my expectations of a Fall of Saigon siege-like travel experience began to fade. Our Iberia flight felt very safe. Airline staff and passengers, all 50 of them, recently tested and scattered around the plane's 400 seats, were vigilant about mask wearing. Flights were rigorously boarded back to front and disembarked front to back. three or four rows at a time, so there were no bottlenecks. New protocols for meal service were expeditious, with neither flight attendants nor any other passengers lingering in the aisles. Once on the ground, we were struck by how altered New York City, where I lived from 1992 to 2002 and often visited, seemed. Friends had warned us that many residents had left, but I wasn't prepared to see so many boarded-up storefronts and empty midtown sidewalks. Everything and everyone seemed a little adrift. We soon got a taste of the city's old rhythm, but compared to Madrid, where, to be fair, the weather is far more conducive to outdoor dining and boutiques and galleries are all open, it felt completely shut down. With our busy PCR testing schedule, every 2 or 3 days to coordinate with our flights, we could limit our quarantine time, but wanted to stay outside and did not make many plans to visit people beyond close friends and family. One drizzly morning after getting our PCR results, we figured everything outdoor and kid-friendly in Midtown Manhattan would be crowded, so we headed north to the Cloisters, the Metropolitan Museum's medieval outpost overlooking the Hudson River. While it seemed ironic to fly to America to see medieval Europe, there were pretty early spring flowers blooming in the gardens, and our unicorn-loving daughter fell in love with the famous unicorn tapestries. From there, we shot up to the Bronx, to the vast Van Cortlandt Park, where the kids chased geese and seagulls, and a gorgeous colonial manor house stands at its center with surprisingly cheerful 18th century interiors. We called a friend who grew up in the Bronx, who sent us to City Island, where on a chilly terrace over the water, the twins ate burgers, and my husband and I consumed our body weight in crab cakes, broiled shrimp, and scallops. You hear the crows in the background. I'm injecting this, right? They probably heard me read this recipe. Now the next section is family time. In New Jersey, our first stop was to get our shots at a pharmacy. The parking lot was packed, but inside there were only two people waiting ahead of me, and I was back in the car under 30 minutes. It was such a low-stress moment that the feeling of relief at getting the first shot took a while to sink in. After that, we shuttled between outdoor family visits, initially still somewhat clenched and hesitant. My father and his wife had a well-rehearsed routine for driveway visits with folding chairs and blankets. To our children's delight, one visit coincided with the Easter Bunny's drive by the local fire department. Encounters at my sister's houses often involved the grown-ups moving the chairs across the lawn to follow the warming rays of the sun as college-age nieces tirelessly chased our tireless kids. This family time went a long way toward unspooling the anxiety that has wound its way so tightly into all our lives over the past 15 months. We even considered remaining in the country through our second doses, but we didn't want the kids to miss their classes. And so, 3 weeks later, we repeated the entire scenario again. Rather than being exhausted by the packing and the flying, we savored the novelty of traveling again. The 2-week undertaking was not inexpensive. We used a combination of airline miles and cash for the flights, and some year-old hotel vouchers, which, when applied to 2021 rates, got us junior suites that sleep four for about $50 per night. Our inbound flights arrived quite late, and there was no hotel dining or room service, so we foraged for our in-room breakfasts from nearby drugstores the night before. Vaccinations aside, the greatest gift after 15 months away was seeing family and friends in person, even if we were standing 10 feet apart on a driveway. Last autumn, we lost someone very dear to our family, not to the pandemic, but to old age, 96, in the midst of it. To my surprise, as we were starting to say goodbye to family on our second trip, it was our 9-year-old daughter who spoke up and asked if we could visit Aunt Fran at the cemetery, as she says, to say goodbye and maybe take her a drawing. With one gesture, our little girl showed us just how much our kids had matured in an upside-down world, when it sometimes felt time had stood still. Quite an interesting story, isn't it? Well, we continue. As the vaccination rollout continues, more people are choosing to venture from home. Andrea Sachs has some suggestions if you're planning a road trip. Her article, with 49 new national scenic byways and all-American roads, there are lots of reasons to get out there and explore. Now, her story was published in the April 16, 2021 issue of the Washington Post. So let's see what Andrea has to tell us. The last time I cruised along Route 2 in western Massachusetts, I was a minor strapped in the back of my parents' car, and the road was just asphalt under our tires. When we met again a few weeks ago, we had both an advance to the next level. I was now behind the driver's wheel, and the Mohawk Trail was a national scenic byway, one of the highest accolades and greatest compliments a U.S. road can receive. Earlier this year, the Federal Highway Administration unveiled 34 new national scenic byways and 15 all-American roads in 28 states, bringing the total to 184 in 48 states. Hawaii and Texas are two exceptions, but this could change in the Lone Star State. Its Senate passed the Texas Scenic Byways Bill last month. The announcement was a long time coming. The agency, which has been running the program since 1991, last bestowed the honor in 2009. One of the things we know about Americans is that they love their cars in the open road. That is a big part of this, says Mark Falzoni, president of Scenic America, a nonprofit dedicated to preserving the country's beauty. We are seeing a revival in scenic byways, and it couldn't come at a better time because of COVID-19 and restrictions, he adds. To be considered for the designation, the route must satisfy a few prerequisites. It must be a state scenic byway, possess regional importance, and exhibit or one scenic national byway or two all-American road of six intrinsic qualities. The application only requires the minimum number, but many of the roads contain several of the characteristics, and these include cultural, natural, historical, recreational, archaeological, and scenic. I could count the Mohawk Trail's attributes on five fingers. At 69 miles, the Mohawk Trail is a condensed road trip, and yet it took hours to complete. The dog-eared line about the journey eclipsing the destination applied. The road opened in 1914 as one of the country's first leisure drives. However, Native Americans had been hunting and trading on this unpaved predecessor, hence the name of the byway, and the logo of a Mohawk raising his open arms to the sky. Because the only co-pilot had received her vaccine, my mother and I stuck to the outdoor attractions. We strolled around Williams College, torn from an admissions catalog campus, and grabbed a Mediterranean lunch in Williamstown's one street downtown. We explored the outbuildings of Mass Mosea, a contemporary art museum that occupies a former printing factory. I didn't remember the microbrewery, and not because I had been barely out of juice boxes or on our last family vacation here. Bright Ideas Brewing is a fairly new addition to the complex. At several points along the route, I scrambled out of the car to walk with soft footsteps on the Mohican Mohawk Recreation Trail. Other reminders of the original travelers appeared through the windshield, such as the Hail to the Sunrise statue, the image of the byway signage, and Salmon Falls and Shelburne Falls, where the Mohawks and Penobscots agreed to a hunting and fishing treaty in the 1700s. I remember scrambling over those rocks, my mother said, of the glacial potholes at the falls, dating our earlier trip to the pre-liability times. As the sun started to descend, I climbed up Poet's Seat Tower in Greenville, the byway's eastern terminus. From my stone perch, I surveyed a land that did not settle for being just scenic. Here are the other national scenic byways and all-American roads from the class of 2021 and whom they are best for based on interest. And the first one she has listed here is Cumberland Historic Byway in Tennessee. It goes from Salina to Cumberland Gap. It's a distance of about 200 miles. The route echoes with the footsteps of pioneering explorers who traversed the northern Cumberland Plateau in search of opportunity to the west in Tennessee and Kentucky. The Obey and Cumberland Rivers supported the burgeoning lumber industry and rise of Nashville. Then we have the Revolutionary Heritage Byway found in Rhode Island, and it's located at Bristol, and it runs about 5 miles. Ignore the fact that the town's namesake is in England. Patriotic Bristol holds one of the country's oldest 4th of July celebrations with marches and floats down the byway. The road appeals year-round, with centuries-old estates, museums, a state park, gardens, a historic district, and a waterfront that upholds the town's shipbuilding and sailing traditions. Then we have the Boomer Bus Byway. This is in Louisiana, goes from Lisbon to Vivian, a distance of about 137 miles. The byway records the highs, lows, and comebacks of such Louisiana industries as oil and gas, lumber, and agriculture, including cotton. Abandoned oil field equipment appears like a ghostly apparition, and Oil City stays true to its name with the Louisiana State Oil and Gas Museum. Casinos offer a personalized boomer bust experience. And then some other options under this category: A1A Scenic and Historic Coastal Byway in Florida. Then there's the Battlescene Scenic Byway of Massachusetts. Then we have the Brandywine Valley Scenic Byway in Pennsylvania, the Norris Freeway in Tennessee, and the Sasquatchie Valley Scenic Byway also in Tennessee. And then we move on to some epic road trippers, they're called. And first up is the California Historic Route 66 Needles to Barstow Scenic Byway. And this goes from Needles to Barstow. The distance is about 178 miles. And the western leg of the Mother Road wiggles through ghost towns, dusty outposts, and the Mojave Trails National Monument, which contains the most unadulterated section of Route 66. There are a few places to stop for an Americana fix and pick, such as the Baghdad Cafe, that's the setting for the 1988 movie, and the Roy's Vacancy Sign. Then we have the Great River Road National Scenic Byway. This is in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Louisiana. Begins in Itasca State Park, Minnesota, and travels all the way to Venice, Louisiana. It's a 565 miles journey in Minnesota, 242 miles in Wisconsin, 322 miles in Iowa, 556 miles in Illinois, 63 miles in Kentucky, 186 miles in Tennessee, and 391 miles in Arkansas. And finally, in Louisiana, you're going to travel 724 miles. Now, the Great River is none other than the Mississippi, the major artery that flows with history, commerce, and wildlife. Built in 1938, this road covers 3,000 miles in 10 states, eight of which earned All-American Road status for their sections. Missouri and Mississippi earned their badges in 2000. If Mark Twain were alive to update The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, surely he would swap out the boy's raft for a sporty red convertible. Then we have the Lincoln Highway Scenic and Historic Byway, Nebraska, and Lincoln Highway Heritage Byway, Iowa. This goes from Omaha to Kimball in Nebraska, and then Clinton to Council Bluffs in Iowa, 400 and 460 miles, respectively. Established in 1913, the Lincoln Highway was the country's first transcontinental road, running from New York City to San Francisco. Nebraska's only cross-state road shadows the Oregon and Mormon trails and passes by the spring hangout of the Sandhill Cranes. In Iowa, about 85% of the original road still exists, and Lincoln Highway purists can see the Seedling Mile, Iowa's first paved portion, halfway between Marion and Mount Vernon, and a preserved section of brick highway and woodbine. Also on the epic road trippers package is the historic Route 66 in Missouri. Now, just going back for a moment, if I may, to that trip we took in California's historic Route 66, Needles to Barstow. If that sounds somewhat familiar, let me take a moment here to inject something to give us a little bit of local connection, if you will. You might recall that back in November 12 of 2009, there was a sign, if you left Wilmington, that showed how far you would have to travel in order to get to Barstow, California, if you used I-40. Remember, I-40 stretches from Wilmington to Barstow. And so you may remember that sign, and it was on the... As you left Wilmington, on the right side of the road, and it said 2,554 miles. And that sign, however, is now a memory. And in November 12, 2009 edition of the Wilmington Star, they wrote this: from this point on, if you want to know how long it takes to get to Barstow, you're going to need to use MapQuest. That's an electronic internet feature. The North Carolina Department of Transportation has said that after having repeated problems with the sign being stolen... Yep, they were stealing that sign. There won't be another one put up. It gets costly after a while. Like at least four of its predecessors, the famed Interstate 40 Barstow, California sign has been stolen, according to the Department of Transportation. This time, it's not going to be replaced. The sign Barstow, California keeps getting stolen, so we will not be placing another due to the fact this has been the fourth sign replaced, says Joe Chance, a deputy division traffic engineer. The sign was a familiar sight to travelers heading west out of Wilmington, had been up for a number of years. Bloggers report similar problems with the sign on I-40 East in California that lists Wilmington as the destination. And that I-40 West sign contained the message Barstow, California. And then, of course, the mileage again was 2,554 miles. So you may remember that or have heard people talking about that. And that's what happened. It's no longer there, thanks to some happy road sign thieves. Well, we also have some other places to visit, and we'll briefly mention some of these in our remaining minutes. For those of you who may be considered waterway seekers, we have the scenic Highway 30A in Florida. This goes from Inlet Beach to Dune Island. It's about 24 miles. The two-lane road rides shotgun to the Gulf of Mexico. There are no cities along the coastal route, only towns and communities with sea or beach in their names. State parks such as the sand dune-studded Topsail Hill Preserve State Park and long stretches of pearly white sand. Then we have the Bold Coast Scenic Byway in Maine, and this goes from Millbridge to Lubeck. And that's about 125 miles. Maine's longest byway stakes out the Down East, the area named after the direction sailing ships followed from Boston and New York. The Atlantic spills into the region's culture, cuisine, and landmarks, such as the West Quoddy Head, which sits on the ocean cliffs and receives the first light of day in the lower 48. And then we have the Wisconsin Lake Superior Scenic Byway in Wisconsin. This goes from Barksdale to Cloverland. That's about 70 miles. And the road traces the southern shore of Lake Superior and dips a big toe into the Great Lake by way of the Bayfield Peninsula. The lake isn't the only water feature either. There are waterfalls at Houghton Falls State Natural Area, two rivers, the Onion and Sioux, and a coastal estuary at Frog Bay Tribal National Park, the country's first tribal national park. And then we have some other options if you're considering these waterway things. In the Rivers of Lakes Heritage Corridor, Florida, the Whitewater Canal Scenic Byway, Indiana, Old Kings Highway, Massachusetts, Door County Coastal Byway, Wisconsin, and the Katahdin Woods and Water Scenic Byway in Maine, Palisades Scenic Byway, New Jersey, and New York. Another group is called the Picture Huggers. This includes Pine Barrens Byway, New Jersey, Old Frankfort Pike Historic and Scenic Byway in Kentucky. And then we have the Silver Thread Colorado Scenic and Historic Byway in Colorado. And next group is called the National Park Superfans, and these are some roads like the Newfound Gap Road Byway in North Carolina and Tennessee. And then we have the Cascade Loop, Washington, also the Zion Scenic Byway in Utah, to name a few. And that, my friends, is going to wrap up today's edition of Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed your trip today with the exciting sounds of nature in the background as we record outdoors in Fairview, North Carolina. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, reminding you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler, available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.